The Archbishop's Hour, 98.9 Albuquerque, 104.5 Santa Fe, 91.7 Clovis, 95.3 Farmington, 100.7 Gallup Grants, 88.7 Portales, 103.1 Santa Rosa, 99.9 Socorro, now bring you local news and information of interest to the Archdiocese of Santa Fe and the state of New Mexico. The Archbishop's Hour is brought to you from the Catholic Center here in Albuquerque. Now, here is your host, Mary Woods.
Welcome to the Archbishop's Hour. We're broadcasting on Immaculate Heart Radio to our New Mexico listeners in the Archdiocese of Santa Fe and the Diocese of Gallup. Through the leadership of Archbishop John C. Wester, we're here to share the message of the gospel and the work of the Catholic Church. I'm your host, Mary Woods, and our producer is Abed Archuleta. Later in the program, my guest today is Karen Smart, who will be giving an iconography workshop at the Benedictine Monastery Retreat in Pecos, New Mexico, in July. And we'll share a meditation on the day's gospel brought to you by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. But before we get to that and our news segment of the day, let's hear about our saint of the day.
This is Franciscan Media's Saint of the Day for May 18th. Today we celebrate Pope St. John I. Inheritances come in many forms. Sometimes they involve money or physical and personal traits passed from one generation to the next. Sometimes they involve particular historical realities. For today's saint, the historical reality he inherited was the Arian heresy, which denied the divinity of Christ. Born in 470, Siena native John was in poor health when he became pope in 523. Italy had been ruled for 30 years by an emperor who embraced the Arian heresy, but was reasonably tolerant of his subjects who were Orthodox believers. When the Eastern emperor began cracking down on the Arians in his area, the Western emperor Theodoric pressured John to lead a delegation to Constantinople to urge a change of heart. Little is known of the outcome of those negotiations, but John had become suspect in Theodoric's eyes. On his way home, John was imprisoned in Ravenna, dying there in 526. His body was taken back to Rome and buried in St. Peter's Basilica, where his epitaph reads, "A Victim for Christ." There's more about the saints, along with inspiration and Catholic resources, at our website, saintoftheday.org. From Franciscan Media, this has been Saint of the Day.
St. John makes living the Christian life sound so simple. Just keep the commandments, and you will remain in Jesus' love just as he remains in his Father's love. There, you have it. Now just go do it, and all will be fine. It sounds so simple. Life experiences, however, make us realize that the ideal is a little bit harder to follow than John seems to make it sound. And I say seems because even John admits to the struggle that following Jesus entails. In today's first reading, St. Luke tells us of one such struggle that the early church had to face. But I find a lesson for us in the way that the early church approached it. The problem was this. Paul and Barnabas had been preaching among the Gentiles, who were responding fairly well and were joining the church. Now the Jewish converts within the church were complaining that those Gentiles should first accept circumcision and become Jews. Peter is arguing against this stance, claiming that expecting them to follow the Jewish law was too great a burden. James then kind of takes over the meeting and quotes a scripture passage backing up Peter, Barnabas, and Paul. Now the lesson I find for us is this. There is civil discussion and then a decision made by the local authority by which all, even Peter, abide. The members of the church don't deny or ignore the issue, but they don't break into warring camps of opposition either. They listen to the various sides, and then James, the local authority, speaks and makes a decision which all follow. It's not a decision that necessarily pleased all, for there were winners and losers. but the community decision was made and followed. If we were to follow the example and method of the early church, living our Christian life would not be struggle-free, but we would have a reasonable way to approach our differences and reach a common decision. Then I think St. John's words would ring true. If we follow Jesus and his commandments, we will live in him and he in us.
You're listening to Archbishop's Hour, Catholic Radio at 98.9 FM in Albuquerque, 104.5 in Santa Fe, 100.7 in Gallup, and 96.7 FM St. Joseph Monument Radio, broadcasting from Holy Cross Parish for the Espanola Valley. From the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, Convocation of Catholic Leaders, The Joy of the Gospel in America, will take place July 1st through the 4th in Orlando, Florida. Unprecedented gathering of Catholic bishops and leaders from across the nation. This summer, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops will be convening an unprecedented gathering of diverse leaders from dioceses and Catholic organizations from across the country to assess the challenges and opportunities of our time, particularly in the context of the Church in the United States. An ongoing initiative of the Bishops' Working Group on the Life and Dignity of the Human Person, the Convocation of Catholic Leaders, The Joy of the Gospel in America, will assemble Catholic leaders for a strategic conversation under the leadership of the bishops on forming missionary disciples to animate the church and to engage the culture. The moment is also an opportunity for the church in the United States to examine today's concerns, challenges, and opportunities in the light of the church's mission of evangelization, and be equipped to go forth, ready to engage the world with the joy of the gospel. Inspired by Evangelii Gaudium, The Joy of the Gospel, the convocation will form leaders who will be equipped and re-energized to share the gospel as missionary disciples, while offering fresh insights informed by new research, communication strategies, and successful models. The Convocation of Catholic Leaders will be held in Orlando, Florida, from July 1st through July 4th. From Vatican Radio, Pope Francis, we must ask the Lord for the gifts of love and joy.
Pope Francis has reminded believers that Jesus' love is infinite and true, unlike worldly passions that seek power and vanity. The Pope was speaking during Mass at the Casa Santa Marta, during which he pointed out that the Christian mission is to give joy and that God's love is at the core of a true Christian life. As the Father loves me, so I also love you, said Pope Francis, quoting from the Gospel reading of the day, to highlight the fact that the Lord's love for us is infinite. The Pope said the Lord asks us to stay close to him and to observe his commandments, pointing out that the Ten Commandments are the foundation, but we are also called to follow all the things that Jesus has taught us. The commandments, the Pope said, of daily life that represent a Christian lifestyle, with the love of the Father for him and his love for us at the heart of everything. There are other loves, the Pope noted. The world itself is full of them.
Ci sono altri amori. Anche il mondo ci propone altri amori.
Love of money, for example, vanity, boastfulness, pride, love of power, which, he said, can even lead to unjust actions in order to achieve more power. These loves, he continued, have nothing to do with the love of Jesus or of the Father. In fact, these loves distance us from Jesus' love. And emphasizing the fact that the Lord's love cannot be measured, Pope Francis said that unlike some worldly loves, it is neither lukewarm nor tainted by interest. Concluding, the Pope said that if we follow the commandments that Jesus has given us, we will remain in Jesus' love and in the infinite love of the Father, obeying God and giving joy to others, which is the mission of all Christians. I'm Linda Bordoni.
You're listening to Archbishop's Hour, Catholic Radio, at 103.1 FM in Santa Rosa, 94.1 in Shiprock, 88.5 in Roswell, and 88.3 FM in Tucumcari. From the Catholic News Service, byline Carol Glatz, papal celebration of Corpus Christi moves to Sunday. Pope Francis will celebrate the Feast of the Body and Blood of Christ and the Corpus Christi procession on a Sunday, June 18th, and not on the traditional Thursday feast day, which is June 15th this year. Throughout Italy and in most other countries, the feast was transferred to the following Sunday years ago. The Pope celebrating on the Sunday can strengthen the participation of the faithful in this solemn public act of adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, said Cardinal Agostino Vallini, the papal vicar of Rome. Announcing the change in a letter on May 1st, the cardinal said he hoped changing the date of the celebration to a non-work day would allow more people to participate in the traditional procession through Rome from the Basilica of St. John Lateran to the Basilica of St. Mary Major. The date of the papal celebration was announced by the Vatican, May 18th, along with a list of Pope Francis' other public liturgical celebrations for June. Pope Francis will celebrate Mass in St. Peter's Square on Pentecost, June 4th, and he will mark the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul with Mass on June 29th in St. Peter's Basilica, and the blessing of palliums to be given to new Metropolitan Archbishops. The pallium is a band made from lamb's wool, which is worn over the shoulders and symbolizes both an archbishop's role as the shepherd of the archdiocese and his communion with the Pope. And that's it for our news segment of the day. We do have announcements that we want to share with you. And we'll start out with so many things going on this weekend. And if we want to start out with wonderful things that you can eat, always a good idea. On Saturday, the 20th of May, the annual Byzantine Bazaar will take place at Our Lady of Perpetual Help Byzantine Catholic Church here in Albuquerque. They're located at 1837 Alvarado Drive Northeast. And from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., you can shop for imported Russian icons, Catholic books, and traditional baked goods. They will be featuring East European food, stuffed cabbage rolls, pierogies, sausage, sauerkraut, hot dogs for the kids. You can dine in or take out. And, of course, it's all to support the Our Lady of Perpetual Help Byzantine Catholic Church Parish. And it's a lot of fun. So that's Saturday, the 20th, and it's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. However, you can get a two-for-one. In the evening on the 20th, you can join the barbecue and bingo with our seminarians of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe right here at the Catholic Center. The event kicks off the 2017 Seminarian Endowment Challenge. The Archdiocese of Santa Fe was chosen by Catholic Extension to participate in the 2017 challenge based on our needs as a mission diocese. The Catholic Extension will be matching donations up to $50,000, and it gives us an opportunity to continue being fishers of men and supporting our seminarians by establishing a permanent seminarian endowment fund. However, the barbecue and bingo are free, so that's going to be lots of fun. You do need to RSVP to attend, and you should do that by calling 831-8173, 831-8173. Did I say there's also bingo? There's also bingo. That will be lots of fun. There is limited seating. Make sure you call and reserve your spot for the Saturday. It's 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Catholic Center, barbecue and bingo with the seminarians of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. Could not get any better than that. Oh, yes, it could. Saturday, May 20th, the Philippine American community in New Mexico will celebrate Santa Cruzan, starting with 4 p.m. Holy Mass at San Felipe de Neri Church in Old Town, Albuquerque. At 5 p.m., there will be the traditional Santa Cruz de Mayo procession, followed at 5:30 by a Filipino cultural exhibit and show at the gazebo in Old Town, Albuquerque, all in celebration and honor of Our Blessed Mother. And commemorating the fact that St. Helen, with the help of her son, King Constantine, found the true cross. So if you need more information, you can call Betsy Custodio at 377-6671, 377-6671, or just be there for the 4 p.m. Mass, Saturday, May 20th, at San Felipe de Neri Church in Old Town. It will be a beautiful event. And in case you didn't have enough to do on Saturday, Sunday, May 21st, the Dominican Ecclesial Institute will host a book signing with several authors, including Dr. Richard Wood, A Shared Future, Dr. Ana Nogar and Enrique La Madrid, Hermanas Azul, about the Blue Lady, Dr. Katie Holscher, her book Religious Lessons, Mary Quinalty, Mountaintop Milagro, and I understand that Marian Amberg from Santa Fe will be there with her book Shrines and Wonders. So you have a really broad range of types of material to choose from, all Catholic authors, and they will have their books 3 to 5 p.m. at the UNM Continuing Education Building that's in Albuquerque at University Boulevard, just north of Indian School. And it's put on by DEI. All are welcome. If you need more information, please call 831-8212, 831-8212. Of course, this is on Sunday, beginning at 3 p.m. Going to be a lot of fun. And for a little bit longer view out to plan into June, June 5th through June 9th, summer classes for ministry will be offered here at the Archdiocese of Santa Fe Catholic Center. It's usually referred to as the Summer Institute, but the long name is the Institute of Formation for Christian Service. It will take place June 5th through June 9th and be held here at Lourdes Hall in the Catholic Center in Albuquerque. A total of 47 classes and workshops will be offered across that week in three daily sessions. There will be a morning, afternoon, and evening session. You don't have to do all three, but if, for instance, your work schedule prevents you from taking a class during the day, you can take the evening block. Classes are offered in both English and Spanish. The cost is $50, and that covers as many classes as you want. So you need to call Kathy at 831-8129, and she'll tell you more. 831-8129. That's it for our announcements. We'll be back with my guest after this break. Please stay with us.
Today we want to find out how big a good marriage is.
You mean how many people it affects?
Yes.
Let's go find out.
How big is it? Yeah. I can't measure it.
Big!
It's worldwide.
I would say big as the universe, and that universe is infinite.
So your marriage affects more than just the two of you.
How many people are we talking about?
At least 1,000.
Thousands.
Yeah!
If you bring joy to your marriage, people are kind of like, I want that too.
You're drawn to that because you see those nice people being together, being happy, and you want to enjoy that too.
If you were going to take all these people that your marriage has influenced, what kind of building would you need to house them all?
It's going to be quite a big building.
Stadium.
We're not the stadium level. A gymnasium.
Oh, that would have to be a cathedral.
So a good marriage really is good for more than two.
Yeah, a good marriage goes a long way.
Want to improve your marriage? For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Church.
Welcome back to Archbishop's Hour. You're listening to us at 98.9 FM in Albuquerque, 104.5 in Santa Fe, 100.7 in Gallup, and 96.7 FM St. Joseph Magnanet Radio, broadcasting for the Espanola Valley. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Karen Smart. She will be leading an icon workshop and retreat at Pecos Monastery, also known as Our Lady of Guadalupe Benedictine Abbey, in Pecos, New Mexico, in July. And it's a beautiful experience. It's going to be very special. But we want to find out more about Karen Smart and her amazing personal story, as well as her story in art. Welcome, Karen, to the show.
Well, thank you, Mary, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm just delighted to meet you. I hope that you'll tell us a little bit about yourself, since the earliest part of your history is your personal history in art. I hope you'll tell us about, when did you know that you were an artist?
I think I've always known. I mean, even as a child, that was always my gift. It wasn't sports, that was for sure. But, you know, I was always drawing something. Both of my parents really encouraged that part of me, so that's been a part of my life as long as I can remember.
Did you have siblings?
No. There you go.
So you were born with a crayon in your hand.
Yes.
And you did have that wonderful encouragement. How did this manifest through the years? What kind of medium were you really drawn to?
Well, I lived in Houston at the time, and I went to the high school for performing and visual arts. So they exposed us to a lot of different medium. So I had worked in all kinds of things, and I think probably I was more drawn to acrylics, working in acrylics on canvas.
To your painting.
Mm-hmm. So that was really... I liked colored pencil a lot, too.
But painting more so than sculpture or some other form?
I was always more of a painter, always All more right. of a painter.
Did you exhibit your work? Did you paint mostly for yourself? Tell us about
that. I painted mostly for myself. It is interesting, though. I have this one painting that I did that's Mucha reproduction. And if you look at it, and if you look at my work today, you can see similarities in them, and kind of a graphic quality, you know.
I was thinking outlining. Alphonse Mucha, the great poster artist.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
The fellow who people remember the popularity of the French poster art from the era of a little bit later than Toulouse-Lautrec. Very, very vibrant.
And very Art Nouveau.
The Art Nouveau and strong colors and movement.
Yes. And,
oh, marvelous.
And so that's still kind of what I'm doing today, just a little bit more refined, I hope.
So the kind of the stylistic elements.
Yes.
Very strong. When we say style, they don't mean generic style. They mean a specific kind of movement of line and use of color that's very vivid. I mean,
yes.
The first it was beautiful and is beautiful art, but it was also the first sort of message art. We don't associate, you know, message art now. We think of, you know, just graphics in your face or album. I guess we don't have album covers anymore.
Right.
We have some other kind of covers, but message art seems to be perfectly appropriate for the transition into iconography, because it's the ultimate message art, isn't it?
It sure is.
And ultimately very beautiful as well. Which leads us to your transition from your own personal art expression to iconography. But there's something in your personal life that really precipitated this as well. Can you tell us a little bit about, say, your background in, you know, in religion?
Well, I was an Episcopalian just long enough to get baptized and confirmed. So that was that. And then I led a very secular life. You know, I was a product of the 60s and 70s and all the goodies that came with that. And so I began my conversion to Catholicism in 2001. And as part of a vow that I made to God, I went on a pilgrimage to Israel. And just so happened, there was a lady on the bus, and she was saying how I lived in Denver at the time, and she was saying that there was this man, Dmitry Andreev, of the Prosopon School, who taught classes in iconography. And I thought, oh, well, that'll be cool. You know, first chance I get, I'll do that. And I did. And the minute I did, I took everything else, all of the other arts and crafts, because I was into that too, and I just abandoned all of it for iconography because it was a perfect fit for me. You know, it matched my skill set. It matched my spirituality, and I think each of us in the church are given gifts. And I thought, well, hey, they need my gift. Surprise, you know. So that's kind of how that worked out.
Would you mind very much sharing with us that moment that precipitated the conversion? We talk about a spiritual conversion, and then you decided to pursue becoming a Roman Catholic. But what was that moment in your life that precipitated?
I was diagnosed with cancer at age 40. And, you know, I do just want to say that I've taken some criticism. People have said, well, you know, the only reason that you converted was because you were afraid of dying. And it's like, yeah, that was certainly the impetus. But that was in 2001, and it's 2017, and I'm still a practicing cured Catholic. So I think maybe there was a little more to it than just fear of death.
Well, I have to interject here and say that there are people who are faced with tremendous, overwhelming challenges in their lives, real fear of death, fear of losing someone else, real important things that they have to wrestle with, and not all of them feel that a way to deal with this is to go to a Catholic shrine and pray. So tell me about going to the Mother Cabrini shrine, and this is long before you thought about being a Catholic. That just happened to be a shrine outside of Denver.
Correct.
Tell me about that. Why did you go there, and what was the deal?
Well, I went there because I was familiar with it. I knew it was there, and it's a really beautiful place.
So you found out about it,
mm-hmm.
and you were scared.
Yes.
And you went to the Cabrini Shrine.
Prayed my little heart out.
And what did you pray for?
Well, I begged God for my life, and I made a bargain with him. And I don't really recommend that, because it's kind of like making a bargain with the devil, because they're both a lot smarter than you are, and you don't know what you're getting yourself into. And so, I was just, you know, really faced with the life I had led up to that point. And I wasn't particularly impressed, you know. And so I said, you know, God, if you'll let me live, I'll do something with that. And so I said, I'll read the Bible from cover to cover. I'll do whatever it takes to convert to Catholicism. I'll go on a pilgrimage.
Why did you think that conversion to Catholicism would somehow be a better part of the deal? Because, I mean, you had been raised in a Christian faith, and you were an Episcopalian, and God's the same God, Episcopal or Catholic.
Right. You know, people ask me all the time, well, why did you choose Catholicism? And it's like, I truly, you know, as in Catholicism, when we don't really have all of the answer, it's a mystery. Well, that's a mystery, because I had very little exposure to the Catholic Church. You know, prior to that, I think Mary did have a lot to do with it. Because I had gone, a couple of times with a girlfriend of mine, you know, when I was in my 20s. And of course, you know, back then, the Women's Lib movement was really big. And I thought, wow, this is a pretty cool church. You know, it's like, look at all the honor and respect they pay to this woman. So I think, you know, that stood out. So I think she planted some seeds, and it just took a while for them to sprout.
So what was the transition period, and what happened after you made your promises to God if he mm-hmm. would save your life at the Mother Cabrini Shrine? Then what happened? Aside from the fact that you are alive and with us today, and I'm just
cured.
Delighted.
I am cured, yeah. Not just in remission or something. I'm totally cured. I set about the business of, you know, keeping my end of the bargain. And one of the things that I did was I joined the Denver Catholic Biblical School. And I will say that that was probably the most life-changing thing that I could have ever done. And it was just a wonderful experience. It was a four-year program, and we had some of the best teachers, biblical scholars. Tim Gray actually runs that. And so I was very fortunate to be in Denver at a time when the biblical school was really on fire. And I'm sure it still is. I'm sure it's grown tremendously since I left Denver. But, you know, once I kind of started getting into that, and it really didn't take long. It was maybe like the second or third class. I started thinking, wow, you know, I can get this. I can understand this. I can pronounce these words and names, and there's key words and key themes, and I need some guidance here, and I've got good guidance, but I can understand this. You know, I can get it. I was intimidated at first. And so then it became like putting a puzzle together. And so pieces started fitting in, you know, one after the other, and it was so exciting. You know, I just couldn't wait to read more. And so I really got on fire with the word. And I started going to religious education classes. And I was fortunate enough that the teacher that I had was a former nun with Mother Teresa. So I didn't get the watered down version, let's say. And, you know, I was just experiencing a lot of really good formation. And it was kind of like you'd been starving, you know, your whole life. And then it's like...
somebody starts bringing out the banquet.
Yeah, then it's the banquet. And you're gobbling, you know, you're gobbling. And I was gobbling... You know, Bible study and religious ed, and, you know, I was reading on my own. I was watching EWTN. I mean, I just couldn't get enough, you know. And that persisted for, you know, years. And I still, you know, I have a hunger for learning, but, you know, I think my appetite kind of has slowed down a little bit. You know, I don't have to gobble everything all at once like I was back then, but there was so much to learn. And when you have lived so differently, you know, from that, and then it's like, you know, it's like you walk into a whole new world, and there's a lot to learn. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the Catholic Church is, you know, it's between that and Scripture, it's the well that never runs dry. You know, there's something for everyone for your entire life. There's no, you know, well, I'm kind of bored now. You know, there's none of that because
you can't really run out of it.
No, there's so much out there. So, yeah, so that was how that
came
about.
So, this is fascinating. Karen has a marvelous website. And if you wanted to learn more about her and also find out more about the workshop that she'll be teaching at Pecos, Our Lady of Guadalupe Benedictine Monastery in Pecos, New Mexico, in July, you can go to her website. It's portalsiconography.com. So that's portalsiconography.com. And you can find out so much more about her process, her work, the workshop itself, and about her. Your conversion to the Roman Catholic faith in 2005, those years at the Denver Catholic Biblical School, and graduated in 2007, but it was in 2006 that you made your pilgrimage to the Holy Land. And that's where you met the person...
The lady on the bus.
The reference to Dmitri Andreev of the Prosopon School in New York. So that would have started your work, transitioning your artwork to this iconography, this devotion to this
Correct.
Very particular kind of message art, if I can still call it that. Before we move away from the topic of having been in the Holy Land, were there any particular places that really struck you, moved you, touched you?
every day was just so amazing. And the thing was, is that I never really had any particular desire to go. And it just so happened that one of my friends that was in the biblical school with me, because they do a pilgrimage every year to Israel or to Rome. And so she was like, come on, Karen, just do it. Just go with us. And I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, so I really wasn't all that excited. I mean, I was game for a new adventure, you know, to see something new and different. But as far as, you know, really having some burning desire in my heart to go to the Holy Land, I didn't. And I think that was a great way to go because I had no expectations. And every day I was blown away.
What was your, what's your favorite memory now that when you look back on it?
Pick three. Oh, wow. I guess one of the really fun things that we did was we went to the Dead Sea. And as a person that's rather thin, I don't float. And so it was really cool to float in the Dead Sea because I floated like a little cork. And we were all out there. It was a group of women, and we were all out there praying. So we were just floating and praying, and it was just a cool experience. It was a lot of fun.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Of the holy site, the traditional pilgrimage sites, anything that particularly resonated with you or visually stuck with you as an artist?
There was, we went to the new catechetical school, and that was a very, very interesting place. And, you know, you have to realize at the time that I went there, I really kind of didn't know anything about icons. And so here I was surrounded in, you know, icon heaven, and didn't know exactly what I was looking at, but I can remember they have a very large icon in their sanctuary of the final judgment. And that, I can remember looking at it and thinking, wow, there's, I don't know what that means, you know, what they're, what's going on in that particular picture, but I was very intrigued by it. And then, of course, later I found out exactly what it was, and I was like, oh, wow.
All right.
Yeah, that's all righty then. But that one, you know, piece of art really stood out for me. There's, I can't think of the name of it. It's in Nazareth. It's the Basilica to Mary. And they have all of, it's like every country has sent artwork of her. And so that surrounds the inside of the church. And then there's kind of like a little outdoor area. And so it's, that was really neat just to see, you know, how she reveals herself, you know, to different cultures and different countries. And so
different artists,
beautiful, beautiful artwork. So that was really incredible.
So you studied with this marvelous iconographer, Dmitry Andreev. And how long did you study in New York?
I actually didn't study in New York. He would come and do workshops in Denver. Mm-hmm. Or there was other people from the school that would teach, but they're all master iconographers. Most of the workshops that I've taken, though, are from Dmitry.
And then what brought you to New Mexico from Denver?
Well, I have family here, and so it was one of those life change times, moments in life. And so I was like, well, let's just go on a do-over. And so I had some family here, and I grew up in El Paso, and we used to come here, you know, a lot every year on vacation. So I was, you know, very familiar with New Mexico, and I don't know, I've always loved it here, always loved it here. And it just, the time was right, and Denver was getting really cold. I was getting really tired of the snow shoveling and things like that. So
how did you make the connection with Pecos Monastery?
Let's see, how did I find out about them?
Or did they approach you to do the workshop?
No, I approached them. A couple of friends and I, we just went for a day trip. And I knew the monastery was there. And we just kind of decided to go on a day trip, a little drive, and went up to the monastery. And I got to talking to Brother Edmund, I believe it is. And we started chatting, and he mentioned that they had some icon workshops in the past. And I showed him some of my work, and he says, well, you might want to pursue that here. And so I plodded forward.
You plodded forward. You seem to have hit your stride and found the mode of your art expression in iconography. But, of course, when we think of iconography, as I've been told, you don't paint an icon, you write
Correct.
An icon.
Correct.
And it involves a lot of meditation and prayer to focus and do this in the traditional way. But you seem to have found your appropriate place in art doing this. What do you like about it, and what keeps you doing it?
Well, again, you know, it's the well that never runs dry. I hear other artists, you know, complain that they, you know, have a block, that they're not motivated, they've, you know, have a dry spell. And, you know, I've got, I don't know how many hundreds of characters just in the Bible alone, not to mention all the saints we have. I mean, it's just an endless, you know, I'll never live long enough to do all the ones I want to do. So that is, you know, inspiring. And I will say, too, though, that generally speaking, I approach it the way I was taught. And Dimitri is Orthodox. So I always go to that first. That's, you know, my foundation, and I go to that first. But, for example, you know, once the schism happened, we don't share saints with the Eastern Church. And so, like with Joan of Arc, well, she wasn't canonized until 1920. And so, obviously, she's not a shared saint with them. And
so there's no traditional icon of Joan of Arc.
Right, and there's no pattern of mm-hmm. her. So in those cases, I do my own patterns. Saint Kateri is another one that is my own pattern. So I have this luxury, I don't know, that maybe not be the right word, of having both to draw from.
That is the very traditional Eastern Orthodox
Correct.
Format or formula for creating an icon, and your development, your view, inspiration, and expression in a traditional form, but of a saint, for instance, Saint Joan of Arc, who is an icon of her has not been written in the Eastern Orthodox Church.
Right, and it won't be, because she's not one of their saints. But Dimitri, you know, I had a chat with him about her, and he said, well, there's no doubt in my mind that she's a saint. So, yes. So, you know.
I might add that if folks go and visit your website, they can look at a gallery of some examples of your work, and that does include your icon of St. Joan of Arc and St. Kateri Tekakwitha. But we also have the Nativity, Archangel Michael, the San Damiano Cross, and the Virgin of Guadalupe, and St. Kirill and Methodius,
yes.
in the Russian-style Kirill, who would have been, that would be a traditional
That's
format.
That's one that we share with them. That one was a commission for a client that was giving it to as a gift to a Slovak community. There, they have like a little museum, and so it was a gift. It was a gift to them. The San Damiano cross, that was, that's really not so much an icon in the traditional sense, but Father Francisco at Mission San Juan Diego down in Los Lunas, I introduced myself because I heard he'd been to Greece and knew a little bit about icons. So when he got there, I introduced myself and showed him some of my work, and he was like, oh, that's very nice, you know, blah, blah. And he goes, do you want to come into the sanctuary? I said, sure, because he was renovating it, doing all these things. And he says, well, I want to do San Damiano cross over the altar, and then we're going to do a new altar, and we're going to do this and that. And I said, well, that'd be lovely, Father. And he said, so that San Damiano cross, could you paint that? Well, sure I can. You know, that was quite the challenge, but I wasn't going to tell him no. And of course, he was under, you know, a very tight deadline. And so it was crazy. It was a very intense piece to work on because of the time factor and because of the subject. You know, when we paint icons, and you can use the word paint interchangeably with write, but there's a hierarchy. You know, usually you start with an angel, and then you'll do like maybe John the Baptist or, you know, some other saint, and then you kind of work up to Mary and then Jesus. And so, you know, that was the first time I had ever done Jesus as an adult and crucified. So it was very intense to work on. And then I did Archangels Michael and Gabriel that flanked the tabernacle for San Clemente Parish down in Los Lunas. And, you know, then that was sort of an opposite experience because that was just fun. That was just fun to work on. You know, I just really enjoyed it, and just the colors, and you get to do jewels and wings and, you know, all kinds of cool things with them. So, you know, each one brings a different experience. And a lot of times it'll be either, you know, what is requested if it's a commission, but then I end up getting some teaching, you know, a teaching from it. And then sometimes, you know, if I'm just doing one on my own, just because, then I'll often choose what I'm personally praying for. So there's different ways to go about, you know, choosing a subject. Some are chosen for you, and, you know, some choose you, and all teach lessons. So it's a really awesome spiritual experience too. And that's kind of one of the things that I'm going to do a little bit differently with this workshop, that if any of you out there have ever taken a workshop before, I think you'll find this one to be a little bit different in that, you know, we will be learning the artistic technique, obviously, but I'm also going to be teaching on the spirituality behind the icon. And then there's different prayer techniques that you can use. So we'll be doing that. We'll be doing a scripture study, and then we'll be doing some journaling as well. So those are some things that are kind of a little bit different from some of the classes that I've taken. So I hope everybody really gets a lot out of it, because there's lots of spiritual tools to use there.
Now, it is mentioned for this workshop that's coming up. It's going to be July 9th through the 16th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Monastery, Benedictine Monastery in Pecos, New Mexico. You're going to be staying at the monastery, and you have a, you know, 7 nights lodging, 3 meals a day, 6 days of instruction, all your materials for completing one icon. And I love the we'll go back to the media you're using.
Okay.
Egg tempera and gold leaf. You say no art experience is required.
That is correct.
Egg tempera, though, egg tempera is one of the most ancient forms of pigment.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and why it has why it's so important in producing icons now.
Well, and
it's sort of like going back to the original.
Right. Well, icons are designed to last for thousands of years. And the egg tempera method does just that. And so that's one reason why we use that.
Are you mixing your own pigments?
I will be mixing the pigments for all of the students, because learning how to mix the pigments is a class in and of itself. And I may be doing something with that in the future. But they're not like acrylic or oil. you know, that all squeezes out of the tube the same consistency, no matter what color you choose. Whereas with, you know, the egg tempera pigments, they are from natural products. So each one has its own little personality, its own little quality. And so some of them can be very gritty, which are very useful for certain steps. And then some of them are real smooth and creamy that are really useful for other steps. Or some are really nice for the transparent layers. And that's what we're doing. We're layering opaque, transparent, one on top of the other, because we want this nice, deep, you know, richness.
There's a certain luminosity that you gain even with the flatness of egg tempera. You get sort of a luminosity in those layering of opaque and then transparent, right?
Correct.
It's like,
correct.
I mean, if you were doing a glazing technique mm-hmm. in oils, you would be doing something similar, but it right. really it gives a great depth to what you're doing. How neat is that?
It's a lot of, and I mean, I think that's another thing that I really like about iconography is everything is so organic, not just in what we use, not in the just the materials that we use, but how it can be incorporated on multiple levels. And so that makes it really exciting. And I do want to encourage, if there's a brave soul out there that says, no way, I can't do it, I'm not artistic, I say, yes, you can, because I'll be mixing all the pigments for you. That's the hard part. The steps are, you know, really pretty laid out for you, you know. So that's not the hard part. I think really, if you haven't painted before, the hardest part is just we use a floating technique. And it's just learning how to hold that brush on the horizontal. And if you can get that, then you can do an icon.
Now, as we've said before, and we'll say again, Karen Smart is she's teaching this icon workshop at Pecos in July, and she's made a point that you don't have to have any art experience. None is required. But I'm curious, because we are talking about icons, does someone have to have any religious or spiritual experience to be able to enter into this experience?
Well, I'm going to say, you know, flat out, no, you don't. But I think that you do need to come with an open mind and an open heart, you know, because anyone can come of any faith or no faith at all. But there's going to be scripture teaching, and you know, that's part of the class. And, you know, we're going to be talking about Jesus and Mary and Holy Spirit. And so if those things are, you know, uncomfortable for you, then I don't know if it's a fit. But if you're open and you want to be curious and say, well, why not? You know, I mean, I'll just see what it's about. Then come on down.
Everybody's welcome.
Right.
Everybody's welcome. And all participants are invited to jump right in. And they'll get the guidance that they need from Karen Smart, iconographer and teacher. Icon Workshop and Retreat. Discover the sacred art and ancient spirituality of iconography at Our Lady of Guadalupe Monastery in Pecos, July 9th through the 16th.
I just wanted to let people know, I haven't checked in the last couple of weeks, but the workshop is limited to 12 persons. And when I checked a couple of weeks ago, it was already half full. So if anybody's thinking about it, now's the time.
Act now, because, and in fact, as you act now, you can call the Pecos Monastery to inquire and see if you can still sign up. Their number is 505-757-6415, 505-757-6415, extension 112. And they'll tell you if there's still room in this iconography workshop with Karen Smart, Pecos Monastery, July 9th through the 16th. it just sounds like a very beautiful time for revelation and inspiration.
We're going to be in such a beautiful place. And we have our own building, and we have opportunities for Mass and confession and adoration. And we're going to be doing scripture study and painting on our icons. And I really hope that people just immerse themselves in the experience and just unplug from their devices and breathe in some God.
Perfect opportunity for that spiritual journey. And it sounds so lovely. I hope everybody who is inspired, as well they should be, by hearing you, will take advantage. Again, the number at the Pecos Monastery is 505-757-6415. And then go to extension 112. And I imagine at the Pecos Monastery website,
there's a link.
There would be a link also to register or get more information. So you have many avenues to get more information about this. As we wrap up our conversation today, I want to thank you, Karen Smart. So lovely to hear about this and your work, but really very special to hear that personal, that personal moment that put you in the way of iconography and developing your faith. And really, it's quite a blessing to all of us. So I really appreciate your sharing that with us.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you having me here today. Thank you.
Is there anything that we've missed that you'd like to make a point of?
Well, if anyone is interested, I also do private classes. I do lectures. So you can look on my website, and you can see the various things that I offer as well. So,
as well as the gallery of some very, very beautiful pieces. I'll mention that again. It's Karen Smart's website is www.portalsiconography.com. So that's PORTALS iconography.com. Beautiful experience. It's going to be marvelous. I'm envious now of all those folks who are going to be there for the iconography workshop at Pecos. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Archbishop's Hour Catholic Radio.
For the past 60 minutes, you've been listening to the Archbishop's Hour from the Catholic Center in Albuquerque. Join us Monday through Friday, noon to 1, for the Archbishop's Hour, discussing with our guests and audience issues of importance to New Mexico Catholics and all the people of God. Thank you for listening and supporting Catholic Radio. Thank you.